Dybala! He is something else. Di Lorenzo, and still Di Lorenzo! The captain brings the house down. Partenopea champions once again, but the 33-year wait will now officially come to an end.
Ciao ragazzi, and welcome to another edition of Serie A Sit Down, World Football Index's podcast for your calcio to go. I'm Frank Crivello. He's Richard Carmen. Ciao, Richard.
Ciao, Frank. How are we doing on this? It's not a Victory Tuesday, is it? It's an Inter celebration, but
for some people it is, yeah.
For some people it is. For some people it is. We'll obviously have to talk about that, but I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I woke up this morning, I put my pants on the same way I always do.
Two legs at a time?
I was already, I was already at peace with Inter winning the Scudetto, so it's not like, there's this back and forth sentiment that player, some Milan fans are ashamed that Milan allowed that to happen and what is Pioli doing and all this other stuff. I mean, when you've made peace with the idea that Inter are going to win this thing, it doesn't sting as much. It's not like it was coming down to the last day and it was the last match and this is going to decide it, and we'll talk about it. It's turning into another nail in the coffin of Stefano Pioli's reign as Milan manager. But in the end, the best team, we'll talk about this, but the best team in this league won the Scudetto. And then they're the best team by a distance. And I see Anthony's here. I see Eduardo's here. Congratulations. Hope you guys are enjoying this. The second star. Milan is blue. Italy is blue. Blue and black, for that matter. Congratulations, and hope you guys are all, certainly enjoying it. So, that's really the only way to put it. I mean, I think they just kind of, it was a formality. It is really what it was.
The only bit of the formality that's left, apparently, according to Eduardo, is that Milan hasn't actually congratulated Inter yet. That's their last team, apparently.
But, you're shocked by this because
I'm really not. But
Eduardo is shocked by this because. So, anyway, Bob is seeing his team win the league at Anfield, at White Hart Lane, and at Old Trafford, and now waiting for Stamford Bridge. Mm-hmm. I mean. But Bob, your Arsenal did—they won it at White Hart Lane back when you had the Invincibles in 2004. But how often does it come up in conversations, really? Am I going to get together with Inter people every day and every day tell me that hey, we won the league?
They probably will, actually. Knowing the Tristi, at least the ones on the chat, they'll probably bring it up every chance they can, and I don't blame them. I probably would too if I was in their shoes. Milan beat Inter, to win the championship. So I don't know. It's interesting how those work.
No, I mean,
Tottenham,
I think
have nothing else to,
But I think you look at it with most Milan fans, they were already going into that game. They were already at peace with the idea that Inter were going to win the match. They were going to win. And I think when you brace yourself for that, it just kind of takes the misery out of it. If you're a Milan supporter, you had some that still believe that they probably could have been able to find a way to get some kind of result to prolong. Inter's coronation, as we say. Yep. But it just didn't happen. So congratulations, Abe. Congratulations. Hope you guys are enjoying yourselves. It's a cool feeling, when your team gets to not shock, more like in the lines of what you're saying. It already was a done deal, but I get why, especially being in the first time a league is won on a dark. Yeah, okay, yeah. Fine.
I saw Uncle Sharma celebrating in the streets of London after their victory, too. So, obviously a lot of people all over the world were celebrating, Inter fans, I should say. Good for them. Congratulations, for sure.
So, let's not waste any time and just keep talking about it. The Scudetto goes to Milan, the blue side of Milan Inter, for the 20th time after a 2-1 win over Milan, a game that I would probably characterize as cagey, a game that I would probably characterize as scrappy, I think Inter had their tried and trusted 11 that we've repeated over and over again. Milan, for some reason, Pioli, you know, after coming off the Roma defeat in the Europa League, decides, you know, in the space of 3 days, he's going to just prepare for this derby with something that Milan have never done before, and that's play Leao down the middle. You know, I mean, so when you saw that, when you saw some of the tactics and that sort of thing, you're just like, oh gosh, another one that's tightening up and overthinking it, right?
Yep, absolutely. It was overthinking it, overcomplicating it. I mean, this is obviously a difficult inter-team to kind of try to control. Nobody's really done it this year. One team has beat them. And so, I mean, you got to stick to what you're tried and true, though, and going to this Leao as a lone striker deal with Musa up top. Why? Why are you going to try something new against, you know, the best team in the league? Why not try it against Empoli or some of these other teams? You know, when you play these top teams, don't overcomplicate it. Just stick to your tried and true lineup. The result probably would have been the same, but at least you would have maybe saved face versus what happened in this game. Not that they didn't, you know, 2-1 is not a respectable scoreline, but I mean, they just look like a shit team compared to the team that won.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. We had the goal on some of the worst man marking on a corner that I've ever seen a professional team display. But, you know, if you're a good team, you're going to take advantage of that. And that's what Inter did. You know, a second ball flick on Acerbi's wide open by himself. And two Milan players push up. I mean, but you know what I sat there and said, they're going to concede on the set piece. Cause one, Inter seemed to score on corners against Milan in just about every derby, or at least it feels that way.
Yeah.
And Milan are just, they're so vulnerable, defending corners. They've been this way for years. But to that level of incompetence defending, but credit to Inter, because good teams are going to take advantage of that. And Calabria is pushing the ball's going laterally. Why are you pushing up? You know, and Calabria, another one. God, what a shit show of a display from a captain from start to finish. And that's Milan's captain. Come, you know, this was, I mean, the way Milan came out, it was just basically, yeah, go ahead, Inter, and go ahead and claim it today.
Yeah.
But the goal, the first goal, the Acerbi goal.
Yeah, it was just horrible marking, like you said. I don't know. I guess they see a big guy in the box. They're like, you know, why should we mark him? You know, he's not going to get the ball. Like, what the hell thinking is this, right? They did the same thing against Mancini and Roma in the Europa League. It's like, use your brain cells here. I mean, the only little guy you probably should be covering is Lautaro, because he's really great in the air for his size. But Acerbi's got to be one of the main threats. Him, Thuram, some of these other guys. You're looking at, you know, Bastoni's decent in the air for his height. But Acerbi's one of the focal points you're going to have to mark. And they just decided, nah, you know, we're good. Give them a lead. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. We come to this. I mean, let's just go straight to the second goal. Because after that, I mean, Inter carved out a few other chances. They could have been up, but they could have been up by at least two at the break. You know, Milan were trying to get some things going. Calabria had the one that Sommer was forced to save. But there wasn't really much else that Sommer was asked to do, which seems to be typical when you play against Inter.
Yeah.
They're so hard. They make you take low percentage chances. And they've been doing that. They've been doing that all season long. And I think that that's what's made them unique in terms of winning this Scudetto, is that you, if you fall behind, good luck trying to get anything out of the match. You know, so they counter, Thuram gets through. I think Tomori's positioning is excellent. I think he's doing a good job, and, you know, he knows Taram's cutting in, and you know there's going to be a shot, and Calabria is in a supporting position. What the fuck are you afraid of, Calabria? I mean, that's a captain's effort. Stand in and take one in the balls. This is the derby, you know, and just the, I mean, and Calabria wasn't the only one that was poor in this game, but he's an easy target for some of the things that happened in this game, including toward the end, which we'll get to in a minute. But another goal, I mean, here's the big problem. The bigger problem I have with Inter clinching the title in front of Milan is, and I have an even bigger problem than that, we'll talk about Pioli here in a little bit, but they lost on two goals that both of them could have been avoided. One, by just some extra concentration and man marking, and then two, just have some balls. I mean, you know, and stand in and block the shot, you know, so you get yourself in the support position, and then you're more worried about a handball than stepping in and blocking the shot. Dude, it's the derby, you know? I don't want to keep, you know, venting frustration over Milan's performance. I do want to celebrate Inter today because I think that it's important to do so. They clinched it. They clinched it with five games to spare. This is one of the most historic season-long performances that we've seen from a Serie A team. I keep drawing myself back to just how pitiful Milan were in some of their displays in this game. They fell over and just let Inter take it, and then only really started getting something going when they fell behind 2-0.
It was very thoughtful of them to really hand over the title to Inter so easily. I think Maignan also is partly to blame on that second goal because his positioning was pretty bad. 9 times out of 10, he gets that. And he did not read that well at all. You know, to Thuram's credit, he looked like his uncle there, Thierry Henry, with his cut in there, his ball handling skills, and then gets the shot off on target. Really, as a striker, all you want to do is get the ball on target. Anything can happen, you know. If you're not going to score goals, if you don't put it on target, he did, and he scored a goal. So, you know, I think Thuram gets a lot of credit. Good hold-up play on Tomori, and then, you know, like I said, Calabria not really stepping up and just doing it. And this game didn't resemble a derby. I mean, if this looked like a derby to anybody, it's the Inter. They had the hunger. They looked like they wanted it. You would have thought that kind of pressure at home, the way the both Tifos were, maybe Inter would have a lot of pressure on them because everyone's expecting them to win at home. But it looked like Milan were like the scared puppies out there, and you know, Inter looked like the great team that they are this season, doing whatever the hell they wanted, didn't look like concerned at all, were not threatened defensively. And then when they had their opportunities, you know, yes, Maignan had some saves in the games, a lot of saves in the game, but Inter continued to put on shots, and that Thuram goal made it 2-0 at that point. And you're like, at this point, Milan's never going to score. It looked pretty bad, and it really did for like 80 minutes. It was just all Inter Milan looked like not even interested in the game. It looked reminiscent of the last, you know, whatever, 10, 20 derbies, it seems like, where Inter's won, you know, majority of those games. So it's pretty pathetic from Milan's side, and full credit to Inter. This is what they've done all season long. They've embarrassed everybody they've played, and it's a lot of it goes down to Inzaghi and his tactics. He is manager of the season by far. Thiago Motta's up there, but I mean, it's Inzaghi 1 and 2, you know, and how he's set up his team for success in every single game, no matter the opponent, no matter the league or tournament. They've read his game plan and ran with it. They're just so deep. This team is just brilliant. It is.
Yeah. You totally agree. Inter was able to just be game managers. They get the lead. They're able to just sit back, diffuse, and then just be able to play on the counter. I mean, Inter looked comfortable the whole 90 minutes, never looked bothered, even when they got it to 2-1 and Tomori scored. They said, all right, we'll finish the job. And that has been the Inter that we've just gotten used to seeing over the course of the season. It's not a derby without Denzel Dumfries and Teo Hernandez getting into a fight. This time it got them both sent off. And then just a really dumb retaliation really is what it was. Fratesi's given Calabria the business a little bit, marking him on a corner, and Calabria swings his – Calabria knows what he's doing. And he gets himself sent off. We got to see Milan fight after the Tomori goal. It didn't turn into positivity and trying to get a result out of it. But you know what? At this point, Inter are champions. They currently sit on 86 points. If they win out, they'll be at 101, one short of Juventus. So let me ask you this question, because, you know, 102 is the mark, which is what Juve achieved in 2013, 2014. But if Inter can win out and get to 101, I'll make the argument that Inter did it better than Juve. Juve
in what regards? In what regards?
I think in the 2013-2014 season, Juventus were a dominant team in a league of that was really, really watered down. I can't think of the next team that could have mounted it. I can't even remember who finished second. That's how watered down it was. I mean, Milan were in their banter era. Inter weren't good. You know, you had a handful of teams that were stepping up and making challenges and that sort of thing. But with what Juventus had all together under Antonio Conte, it was theirs. Okay. Serie A is in a much better place now. I mean, all you have to do is look and see five teams are going to qualify for the Champions League next season. So, you know, when you think that there's going to be an extra spot for two nations, you would have thought, you would have just assumed, okay, maybe England and Spain or England and Germany or something like that. But no, Italy, they have the top coefficient. And they've got five teams. And that's a mark of the work that the teams have done to improve themselves. Napoli, you know, it's been a bad season for them this year, but they've been more of a force, including winning the Scudetto last year. Milan, still a talented team. You know, a much, much more responsibly constructed squad than they've had in years past. Roma are talented and, you know, started playing up to their talent late in the season, but are talented. Bologna's been the surprise. Atalanta has sustained, you know, a pretty high level here over the last few years. You know, Lazio has had a little bit of a dip, but they've been challenging. So, you know, in Juventus, you know, they've had to deal with some punishments and they've had to deal with some things. But I would argue that if Inter closed this out at 101, this 101 to me is more impressive than Juve's 102 from 10 years ago. What would you say?
I mean, that's a fair argument to make, just because, and it's not to discredit that Juventus team. I know Rio's in the chat and some others. That team was phenomenal. The talent they had was phenomenal from front to back. However, like you said, if you look at how the league was, it wasn't that much of a league. And Vincent says it. Roma finished second that year, 20 points behind Juve.
Yeah.
And it was an okay, Roma team. But this year, you know, this Milan team, for the most part, is pretty good. Juventus is decent. You know, Bologna's obviously in a fantastic year. Atalanta's in a decent year. Roma as well. There are a lot of good teams, and we have the possibility of having three teams in a European final. You might have two Italian teams in Europa League. You might have an Italian team in Europa Conference League. So, yeah. I mean, we're doing really well. A lot of teams are doing well. It's just Inter are that much superior than everybody else. They came against an unfortunate brick wall in Atleti, where they just missed out, you know, to a hot goalkeeper and a good defense. But I mean, this is one of the best teams in Europe, and I think a better argument would to be, instead of saying, you know, this Inter versus that 102 Juventus, I say this Inter versus the 2011 Inter, where they won the treble. I'm curious how the Interisti feel about that, and I know this question is brought up on CBS Sports Golazo, is because obviously the treble team, they won everything. Right, but were they? Did they look as dominant or stylistic as this team does? I say no. This team, what Inzaghi has brought to them, they have freaking, you know, center back to center back crossings that score for goals in games. They press really well. They all pass excellent. They have a great goalkeeper. This team is arguably their best team, at least, you know, compared to the 2011 team. Now, obviously, they won everything. They won Champions League, and so I'm sure it might be a 50-50 call there, but, you know, I think that's more of the fair argument to make versus the 102 Juve, because the banter errors that were in place, the teams that were competing against Juve, that Juve team is phenomenal, but considering who was around them at the time, when Inter won the treble, they played against some hell of good teams at that time. Juve were still good, Milan were good, and they went through some great teams in the Champions League as well. So, I mean, that's more fair argument, I think, in my book.
Yeah, I mean, Reno, we're not saying that nobody beats your record. We get that. We're saying that if Inter close this out and win their last five games and end it 1-1,
yeah,
with how much stronger Serie A is now than it was 10 years ago, to me, this 1-1 from Inter is more impressive than what Juve did 10 years ago. Even though Juve had the 102 points. Now that said, now let me read you what was the typical starting 11 for Juve that season. Okay. You had Buffon. It was a 3-5-2, like Inter do. 3-5-2. It was Buffon in goal. And you had the BBC in back. Lichtsteiner and De Celi were the wingbacks. And then a midfield of Vidal, Pirlo, and Pogba. And then you had Carlos Tevez and Mirko Vucinic up front. That against this Inter, I would love to see that game.
That would be a rock fight, because
a big time rock fight. Yes,
the advantage of goal goes to Juve. Buffon, you know, prime versus prime. I'm talking about. BBC is the better defense, mm-hmm. but this Inter defense is pretty damn good all day around. You know, if you look at the five-man unit, right? So you had the three center backs plus the two wing backs versus, you know, team versus team. I say Inter has the advantage. Center backs, purely on center backs, it's Juventus. Midfield, it's slightly in Juventus's favor. In attackers, it's Inter's favor. It's a rock fight. That's what it is. You know, so I mean,
I think in 90 minutes it ends 0-0.
Yeah,
might end 1-1, but it would be
certainly the treble winning team in 2011 or 2010, whatever it was. That would be certainly a penalty, goes to penalties. That's Mourinho there, so they're going to go into penalties there.
Yeah, agreed.
But Tevez is such a unique player. He got up for those kind of games. He would, you know, set people off and score goals. I mean, Tevez, when he was angry, it was to everyone's benefit on his team, because he just got to another level. It's hard to compare those two teams, all three teams, really. It's just the eras were different, but the teams were all excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be a hell of a match, that's for sure. And I think that's what we're getting at. I think we've got two teams that are achieving an immense level of excellence. You know, Inter's still in the process of doing it and still have five games to go. So some of this is, you know, just kind of, you know, it's more of an, okay, if then conversation. But, you know, clearly what they've done this season with this league and with how strong everybody is, you know, when I went back and did my predictions at the beginning of the season, I predicted Inter to win the Scudetto. And I said it for this very reason: continuity matters. Okay. Absolutely. Milan was shuffling the deck. They were ridding themselves of players. They were bringing in some new players. You know, Juventus were going through some things, maybe not as deep as they've been in the past because of some of the indiscretions that they had, you know, and things like that. You know, Napoli with Rudy Garcia, and you know, let's remember Rudy Garcia started the season as Napoli's manager. We were all old enough to remember.
How many managers ago was that?
Yeah, exactly. So we knew that Rudy Garcia wasn't at Napoli wasn't believable when it happened. And we thought Lazio was not a complete product yet. We thought Roma had a lot of potential, but we learned that it was Mourinho that held them back. So, you know, so for me, the continuity and all Inter had to do was plug in a new goalkeeper and plug in a forward to partner with Lautaro Martinez, and then off they went. It was really easy to pick them to win this title. I guess I, you know, more surprised at the magnitude and the gap right now. 17 points clear. Can't say that I saw that coming. I don't think anybody in their right mind said that they could.
So I think they picked the right goalkeeper, obviously, and not many people. I mean, now obviously people understand who Sommer is. But I think at the time, people just thought, oh, just another goalkeeper, not to Onana's level. And it's like, no, this guy, if you watched him at all, even if you watch him internationally, you'd understand how good he was or is. And so he fit with them like a glove. Thuram, it's always the unknown when you bring in a quality player from a different league. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. And it fit in perfectly with this team. His pace to go with, you know, Lautaro's power and passing precision and hunger, it just worked out great. And just the rest of the team, the continuity, like you mentioned, they not only continued what they did last year, they built upon it by tenfold. They understand Inzaghi that much more, you know, with another season under the belt. They had the nuances to change things up and really go after their opponents in multitude of ways. It wasn't just always high attack. It was sometimes a shit show, but their shit housing is better than yours. And so they did it multiple different ways, and they every time it's always Inter, and that's a sign of a true champion, the way they were able to, no matter the situation, they would kick into another gear and get the result. And that's kudos to Inzaghi.
And Pavard too.
Yeah.
You know, although initially Pavard didn't start as regularly, I think it was kind of a, you know, Darmian, Acerbi, Bastoni set up back there, you know, for much of it, but Pavard ended up, you know, growing into his role and becoming vital here down the stretch. You know, so there's that to be said. So, you know, so many positives about Inter, and congratulations to him on winning this Scudetto and doing so in dominant fashion. One of the most impressive, season long performances we've seen, from a team, Napoli's last season, we're dominant, and they were dominant in a very entertaining fashion too, you know, so, we'll eventually have one of these years where the Scudetto will come down to the last day. So, or the last couple of match days. So,
yeah,
but we shall see. We shall see. And I think that the teams are going to continue to strengthen. I think it's going to make the burden of Inter trying to repeat a little more difficult. And I think that, you know, having a trend of the last few years where there hasn't been a repeat champion since Juve's run ended, it's been Inter, Milan, Napoli, Inter. I think that comes into play a little bit too. I think that it's going to be hard. It's hard to replicate what Inter did this season, at least at the level that they did it. You know, they might be able to win it with a much closer and more competitive league next year. But we'll see how that shakes out.
That's the thing too, right? Last year we looked at Napoli and how dominant they were, and we said, oh, for sure they're challenging for the title this year. And yeah, they lost a couple pieces, you know, in particular Kim Min-jae. And you didn't realize, oh, obviously, the manager as well, but you didn't really think that it was going to have as great an impact as it did. And now with Inter this summer, you expect them to hold on to many players, but, you know, you lose a couple key pieces, you don't fill them back with the right replacements. It could be a similar season for them, you know, and you never know. I think this team is built a little bit better. They have a lot more depth than that Napoli team did, even though that Napoli team was really well-rounded. But yeah, you never know these things. Sometimes, you know, end of the season, you're like, for sure, they're going to be up there and repeating again. And then you see what happened to Napoli this year or Milan when they tried to repeat and, you know, and so on and so forth. So,
yep. It'll be interesting to see. So, I with Ollie, I did not believe in Napoli at the beginning of the season. I did not believe in Lazio. Yep.
Saw Rudy Garcia and I was like, nope, not going to happen.
Yep. So, but here we are. And, they're going to be difficult to beat. They have the players they have. Let's just say this. They have what's in place to repeat, you know. But lately it's been difficult to repeat. And, you know, we've seen them, you know, obviously Napoli coming off a dominant season last year. And look what they've been this year. So Milan winning the title two seasons ago and then finished fifth the following season. And thankfully got into the Champions League because of some of the indiscretions that Juve found themselves in. So, so going from the blue side to the red side, it's done that Pioli's out. Okay. And, you know, and I had a long, if you go to the Serie A sit down page on Twitter, I had a long, after the Roma defeat, after going out of the Europa League, I had a pretty, lengthy thing here. What we are here for, Pioli out, let's hear it. Well, I mean, go to at Serie A sit down on Twitter and find my tweet about what I had to say. Here's where I'm at with Pioli. Okay. If there's a move in the summer, if there's a move, the summer had to be it. We've said this before on this podcast as well. Dumping him during the season. We talked about it back when Napoli dumped Rudy Garcia and said, Napoli's making the mistake, although, you know, and I think they're going to be worse for it when they change to Mazzarri. Milan are going to be better off for sticking with Pioli. And in the long run, when you look at the body of work and when you look at the big picture, sticking with Pioli was correct because Milan are firmly in a Champions League place. Okay, they didn't qualify out of the group stage. So what I would say here is that he got a lot of unfair criticism from the Pioli out crowd and the Pioli out fan base, you know, because he couldn't keep up with Inter. If you just listen, if you just listened to us a few minutes ago, we said, who's going to keep up with that reasonably? You know, they're going to go down in history. They're going to go down as probably, you know, statistically, if they went out, it'll be the second best performance from a Serie A team in a 95-year period to the 2013-14 Juve team. you know, only one other team in Serie A history was better than this Inter, you know, when you're talking about points. So,
but by the way, if Sommer gets a shutout for the last five games, he sets a new Serie A record. He's at 17 currently with Milinkovic-Savic.
Yeah, there you go. So, so I think he was unfairly ostracized by the, you know, because you also got to remember with Milan, they had an injury crisis for a good chunk of the season that helped that impacted their performance and that had them losing some ground to Inter. You know, you said it earlier, Inter stayed healthy, you know. There wasn't a long-term injury that they had that impacted them. And that's part of why, you know, they've stayed fit. They did a great job there. So you got that. You got and then you got to go to the fact that, all right, Pioli won a Scudetto. All right, he got them to the Champions League semifinal. He's returned Milan to regular Champions League football. Okay, and Pioli's got to be respected as the manager that officially pulled Milan out of this banter era, okay, and has helped to restore, you know, some of the, you know, restore Milan back to a level, I wouldn't say among Europe's elite, but among Europe's most competitive, okay? And, you know, what I would say here, and it's going to be kind of piggybacking what Ahmed just posted here in the chat, is he tightened up at the worst times. He did not manage the team with bravery and with leadership, you know, at the worst times. Some of the tactics against Roma in the Europa League were indefensible. Playing Leao down the middle against Inter was indefensible. You know, so all of this adds up to, and while the players will continue to say, Giroud was on record saying, I love playing for this guy. Teo was on record saying, I love playing for this guy. The players support him. Okay. It's one thing for the players to support him, and that's all well and good. But the reality is now that these games have unfolded and now that we're at a different place than we probably were 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, Pioli has run his course. Okay. He's taken Milan as far as he possibly can. I think the ceiling has been hit. I don't think it can be broken. And the summer is the right time to move on. Let Pioli finish the season. Let him go out. Hopefully he goes out with respect and dignity and that he's not getting dogged by the faction of the fan base that has been dogging him all season long. But to me, time to go. You know, I'm not a Pioli out guy. I'm never going to, because I'm not going to degrade myself to their level of thinking. They're just Pioli out without solutions. Okay. The large majority of them. All right. But I am saying it's summer is going to be time to move on. So I'll let you have your editorial on this.
It's not going to be as long as yours, but I'm on the long, the same.
Yeah, I get long winded. I'm Italian.
I'm along the same lines as you. You know, I think, you know, Pioli in big games, as you said, that's been the real crux of his tenure, is that he did, at first he started out too conservative, and then he became overthinking about every single game, like the layout as a striker in against Inter, like, doesn't make sense. In games where if he just did his stuck to his bread and butter, he had a better chance than when he tried to get too creative. There are times when you have to think outside the box, but not when you're playing against a juggernaut like Inter or some of these teams that you're going up against in the bigger competitions. And so, yeah, that's what he's going to be known for sure. I think ultimately you look in hindsight, he reached his ceiling, got them a Scudetto with the likes of Messias and Salamakers and Krunic and these kind of guys. So he's got to be applauded for that. He went from a mid-table manager to a top-end man, a Champions League type manager, getting Milan back from out of the banter era, like you said, with Maldini's help, obviously, and keeping them consistently in the Champions League play. So he gets applauded for that, but he ran his course, and it wasn't like he wasn't a good manager. The team, he did fantastic to bring up the youngsters. This team that had, you know, 11 new players or whatever the heck it was, I mean, they all were fairly successful this year. If you look at the numbers, you know, even Chiquese came on late. The way that he built Adley slowly but surely, Adley's starting to become a decent player. But it is the big games, which you're known for, and when you can't beat your rivals. He has the most losses against Inter out of anyone in Milan's history in terms of managers, 6 now. They've dominated the derby. It's not really a derby anymore. It's just been an ass-whooping the last, you know, 10 whatever years it is, and Pioli's been under that for a majority of the time, and so...
Well, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I was just saying that, you know, the big games is what matters, and it matters to Milanisti and any big club around the world, and... You know, ultimately, our goals are, you know, to go deep into Champions League, which they did last year. But this year, again, getting bounced again. And then, you know, not doing well in Coppa Italia, not doing well in the league, except for that 1 year. It's time to move on. Thank you. But, you know, move on. And let's see who else can do, who we get in the summertime. And like I always said, and you said as well, the right time to move him is in the summer, not in the middle of the season. It's in the summer. Start, you know, right away, get a new manager and let him have a whole summer to build his team. And then see what you got going into next season. But, yeah, time's up.
We were asked by the chat who's the ideal replacement for Pioli. Well, yes. I'll just say this. We had – I remember after a derby a few years ago, we had Nima with us when Gattuso was managing.
Yep.
Now, Giampaolo didn't do a derby. So it was Gattuso and Pioli that have been doing the derbies. And and Gattuso was tight when it came to the derby too.
So conservative.
And I said this also on the Serie A sit down page on Twitter, Serie A sitter. anyway, why would that be funny?
I don't know.
So
it's funny.
The next manager needs to basically stick his chest out and say, "We're Milan. We're not adjusting for anybody." Okay. And this is how we're gonna come out and play you. This is what we're gonna have to play. You're the team that's gonna have to adjust. Okay.
As Inzaghi did with Inter.
Yes. Sacchi did this, Capello did this, Ancelotti did this, and they won a lot of derbies, they won a lot of trophies. Okay. You know, a manager that's going to put some steel back into Milan, that is going to say, "Hey, we're not tightening up anymore, we're not overthinking this. This is the best way we can play. And this is how we're going to go out and line up." And you have to adjust to us. We're not going to adjust to you. I think that kind of personality. Now, the easy answer to that is, well, it's Antonio Conte. But I don't want Antonio Conte at Milan. Okay, yeah. I'm in the minority. I'm probably in the minority on that, and I get it. But I look at... when he leaves in a hissy fit because he can't get the better players that he wants, and he leaves the club in a mess. Okay. I had somebody say, well, you know, conveniently leave out the Juve and Inter. Well, a couple things there. First of all, transitioning from Conte to Allegri at Juventus, and it was in a time where Serie A was relatively watered down, but Allegri's tactics were very similar to Conte's, even though Allegri played with a back four, he would sometimes go to a 3. Okay. At Inter, Inter found the most natural possible successor to Conte and Simone Inzaghi, who likes to play with 3 at the back, as Conte does. And you don't have to do a whole lot to the roster to get him to play the way Inzaghi wants to play. Okay. But it's, I look at Chelsea and I look at Tottenham and I look at the shit show that he left behind at both places. Okay. Chelsea still isn't right. Okay. Tottenham has been reasonable under Postecoglou, but they also have some limited resources too. But to me, so that's the 4 examples and it's a 50% hit. I need better than that. Okay. So that's why I'm not on Conte. I've heard possibly Unai Emery if he is fed up with how the contract talks are going at Aston Villa, it would take an awful lot of money to get him to Milan. That would be my dream get if you're going to go outside of Italy, because of look what he's done with Aston Villa. He's basically said, "Hey, this is how we're going to play and we're going to make people adjust to who we are." He wins cups. You know, that's one thing that that's something that he does. You know, he wins competitions. you know, so that would be, but that's kind of a pipe dream just because of the financials. And I think ultimately he stays at Aston Villa. Mark Van Bommel is being bandied about as a favorite, if, you know, depending on what you read. I don't like how it went from at PSV. I don't like how it went from at Wolfsburg. Unai's contract is done, by the way. Yeah. I'm leery about that selection. You know, I don't think that Serbi's coming. It's going to be very interesting who fills this seat. I don't think Thiago Motta's coming. I think there's a better chance of him going to Juventus. But ultimately,
not
I want...
if Juve win the Coppa Italia.
Exactly. And I want... Conte Sao would be great. But yep. I want a manager that's going to come in here and say, we're Milan. And is not going to be afraid of the situation. Is not going to be afraid of the big games.
Yeah, reading some of the names here. Tuchel, not for me. Conte Sao, I like. Emery, I would like. Lopetegui, nah. Van Bommel, no. Nah, I mean, I'd rather have Mota versus Van Bommel. At least Mota has been in the league.
Yeah.
Hansi Flick is a nice shout as well. Conte, I don't like him. He's also the demands, you know, for the money. Cardinale, he's talking about, you know, not spending money, playing money ball. And Conte is talking about show me the money. It's not gonna, that wouldn't work either, yeah, too. That's yeah. another reason not to pick Conte, and I don't want Conte here. Yeah, it's interesting who you pick here. Even the dreamers in Milan would be like, oh yeah, we should get Carlo Ancelotti. No, one, he's not leaving Real Madrid. He's done when he's done there. But I don't want him back anyway. It never works again as a, you know, when you bring back old managers. It's a tough call. My list of who I don't want to be here is longer than the list that I do want to be here. It's a tough call. Like I said, there has to be a person, like you said, that wants, that chose Milan above all, can win in the league and in the cups. That's important. Sarri was an interesting shout. That's actually not a bad shout, Sarri, because he probably could do some things. You know, we know he's decent in the league, and he also knows how to win cups. But he probably wouldn't be in my top three, honestly. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who they pick. Again, this is part of Cardinale and knowing who they are and can you trust them. You got to give them an opportunity to show us that they know or don't know what they're doing. They show in the market that they kind of know what they're doing. Let's see if managerial-wise, can they figure this out? Just hopefully it's not Conte.
Yeah. Xavi is a possible... Barca's leaving, or he's leaving Barca. So that was another possibility. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I don't think there's anybody... Sadi's interesting. I don't know about Galtier or...
No to Gasperini.
Fonseca.
No, not to Fonseca either.
Yeah. So...
Like I said, you need someone who's going to threat for the Scudetto and threat for deep runs in the Champions League.
That's just it. And then the biggest thing that I want to say is, like, you know, Milan fans and Pioli out people, okay, you're going to get your wish, but don't have this delusion that a world-class name is coming, okay? Yeah. But we do need somebody that's going to bring some energy. You know, Milan needs somebody that's going to bring some energy that is going to want to win. So
Xabi Alonso. Oh, wait, no, you can't.
Yeah. He's saying he's staying, so...
He's staying.
So we'll see. You know, I mean, the other pipe dream would be asking Klopp if he would want to reconsider coming back a little sooner than he thought, but there's no chance. So, yeah. So speaking of a team that has played a certain way all season long and has made everybody adjust to them, Bologna, man, they've got one foot in on an improbable Champions League placing after the 3-1 win at Roma. Elazuzi, we don't even need to do goals of the week. Elazuzi had the goal of the week. We'll just We'll just knock that one out of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a Salamakers dink. We had you know, Osmoun scoring, but 3-1 to Bologna. They are pretty much at the doorstep now of qualification for the UEFA Champions League. They sit on 62 points. They are 8 points clear of Atalanta. Atalanta do have a game in hand, but it would have to be a complete catastrophic meltdown for Bologna to fall out of the top five now at this point and reach the Champions League. If Inter weren't so dominant, this would be a shoo-in for Thiago Motta to be manager of the season. But when you look at Bologna statistically, they really have done it in a way similar to Juventus and Inter. Very controlled game manager type stuff. They defend extremely well. Calafiori's been amazing this season.
Yeah.
And they defend you, they frustrate you, they find ways to win through and a lot of it playing through Cerci up front. They've been very methodical in their approach. They haven't deviated from it at any point this season. And that is why they're sitting there fourth and headed to the Champions League as we see it.
Yeah, it's been an amazing job by Thiago Motta. And there's certainly a huge group of people who say Thiago Motta, manager of the year. And it's hard to argue that. I mean, obviously, both managers, he and Inzaghi, have done a phenomenal job. Yeah, Motta is just, it's incredible what he's done. Like, we saw, he's been this guy who had this potential for the longest time. Obviously, playing in the youth, managing the youth academies over at PSG, and then coming over to Serie A. Wasn't sure I was going to pan out, but I mean, you know, last season we finally got a glimpse of it, and he built upon it this year with a team that just on a mission to get in Europe. I don't know if they were on a mission to get the Champions League, but they certainly got it. And what you see from Thiago Motta is he's taken players that were already there. He brought in players that were outcasts, were not necessarily the stars of their teams, but they found ways to play to their strengths and get them to play as a unit. And then all of a sudden, you got some superstars that showed up. I mean, Posch is a guy who has been good already, but, you know, prior to Motta, Skorupski as well. But some of these other guys, Calafiori was a left back before, right? Xerxes, nobody knew about him, really. We saw him last year as a backup to Arnautovic.
Yeah.
Salamakers, I mean, he was the joke of Serie A for a long time. Orsolini was a guy, always had this potential with fantastic skill set, never could do anything with it. And the list goes on and on and on. Even Ferguson. Ferguson's the guy we kind of knew about a little bit.
Yeah.
But he just brought them all together, got them to raise their game to another level. And they play with such cohesiveness. All three goals today, the Azuzi goal, Salamaker goals, and even the Xerxes goal. It's just wonderful chemistry between give and goes, the movement by the team. And that goes to the manager and drilling this in practice. They play at a different level. They're very disciplined defensively. And that's got to be 100%, you know, kudos to Motta and his management team. It's a phenomenal job. And, you know, if he pulls a Xabi Alonso, decides to stay, great. You can't disrespect him for that. But I think bigger things are calling for him. And the question will obviously be, wherever he moves, can he translate this to another team with enough time? It's always when you make those moves, they want to see those results right away. Something like what Thiago Motta does, it takes time to get the right players in the right pieces in the right places and then, you know, get your things. So will they have the owner or the leadership that gives them patience? We'll see. No. I still think Milan's a great place to do that at, but, you know, hey, you know, it's me, you know.
Yep. We'll see. I mean, that's the thing. And can they keep this squad together? Are they going to be ready for a Champions League push? You know, there's certainly, how much are the Saputos going to invest, into the club? Are they going to take, if they sell Cerci, are they going to take that money and reinvest it right away? So that's going to be interesting to see with them. But it's been a very spirited run from them this season, and it's been fun to see it, unfold week after week. And I just didn't have the courage to move them. I think I had them eighth or something like that. I just did not have the courage to move them any higher than that. So
yeah, me too. Yeah,
I thought they'd be strong. I thought they'd be, they'd be a team that, were going to give everybody some trouble. But I didn't think they were going to be this good. They're certainly the surprise of the season. One of the surprise stories for Serie A over the last few years, when you come to think of it. So,
and the big question for them, the big question for Bologna this summer, Bob's kind of alluding to it, is that can they keep the vultures away? Anytime you have these surprise runs where teams show up, the vultures come. We saw this with Sassuolo so many years, Atalanta, all these teams that have had like these great runs, and then all of a sudden their team gets picked apart and then they had to start from scratch. And so we'll see. Yep. It depends what the Saputos want, like you said, and what happens with the manager and some of their key pieces like Xerxes. So
100%. 100%. So So, yes, we'll pretty soon be talking about Bologna officially in the Champions League. They're almost there. This was a huge win for them against Roma. So let's fly through the rest of these games that took place here at the weekend. It started Friday, Lazio with a late winner from Luis Alberto at Genoa. That was a 1-0 win there. Cagliari and Juventus. Cagliari go ahead and grab another important point in their quest to stay up. At the expense of Juventus, a 2-2 draw there. That was, let's see, two penalties for Cagliari. Gaetano in the 30th, Yerry Mina in the 36th, and then a great free kick from Vlahovic in the 61st, and then the Alberto De Sena own goal there, making it honors even on the island. Heading over to Saturday, you had Empoli doing Empoli things to Napoli. Empoli just... they just love playing Napoli, don't they? And it was a 1-0 win, a goal by Chieri there. Empoli sweeps Napoli on the season. They've crazy. Actually beaten them 4 out of the last 6 times they've played each other.
That's their bogey team.
Yeah, would not have thought that. That is officially Napoli's bogey team, absolutely. So,
wow.
Hellas Verona in the 93rd minute get 3 vital points through Diego Coppola in a win over Udinese. Jumping over to Sunday's games, we had Lecce at a life. I mean, Sassuolo. I can't say nice things about Sassuolo anymore. You know, I keep thinking the talent's there to stay up. And I mean, this was the most don't give a shit performance I've seen. I mean, this is
they act like they're safe.
Well, the second goal that Dorgu scored. Did you see Ehrlich when he was trying to track him? Like once the ball got past Ehrlich, he just stopped playing and let Dorgas, go ahead, have a free pass. Go ahead and score. But that was dreadful from Sassuolo, and in front of their own fans too. Gendre scored in the 11th minute. That Dorgu goal came in minute 15, and then Piccoli on the counter in minute 61, sealing Sassuolo's fate. Torino and Frosinone, apparently they didn't get the memo, and I don't think anybody watched anyway, 0-0. And then Fiorentina 2-0 at Salernitana. That was with goals by Kwame in the 80th minute, and then Ikone in the 95th, further piling on the misery for Salernitana. And then Atalanta winning at Monza, 2-1. It was De Ketelaere again, 44th minute. On an assist from Ademola Lookman. And then this is the feel-good story of the late season. El Bilal Touré returning to Atalanta after a lengthy injury and coming on and scoring. Atalanta's attack just gets – I mean, comes back and looks fit and looks like he's ready to go at the right time as Atalanta are trying to make a push to win the Europa League. He could be a vital part. Daniel Maldini with a really nice curler in the 89th minute of this game. From Monza to at least get a goal and get some kind of consolation out of it. So, talked about the Roma-Bologna game already. We talked about the Milan derby. So, as far as the rest of it, Richard, where do you want to start?
Yeah, one last thing about the Bologna game. I think it's a little bit of the trap game for Roma. A difficult team, but they just came off an impressive win in Europa League. And so, a little downer is going to happen. But you're playing against a buzzsaw like Bologna. That's going to happen, right? Lazio, Genoa. I thought Genoa had a lot of opportunities missed. I'm starting to like that front three a lot. You know, Retegui, Ekuban, and Gudmundsen. They just failed to get their shit together and get a goal. And unfortunately for them, Lazio found a way to get a goal. And I hate saying that term again, but they did. And Cagliari, Juventus. Cagliari had a great mindset to start the game. They really took it to Juventus in that first half. Being clinical on their chances, earned 2 penalties in that first half. They probably could have scored another one. Juventus didn't give up. They kept going at it. I think that goal by Vlahovic was key. Really helped them get back to the game. And then, obviously, again, the own goal late didn't help Cagliari's matter. But, you know, they got a point. That's good for them. Hellas Udinese. What a game. It's just all season long. Udinese looked like they're playing for a draw in the sense that it's tied. They had lots of opportunities like they have all season long and just can't finish the ball. It's at the expense of another manager now with that loss, the late last-minute loss to Hellas. They got a new manager now coming in. Fabio Cannavaro is coming in now as a new manager with the last couple games of the season to try to see if they can save them from relegation. We'll see. But yeah,
yeah, that's right. Cannavaro is going to they sacked Chelfi and they're bringing in Cannavaro, eh?
Yeah, they're getting desperate now. They're getting desperate. But I think Udinese again, it's always so much a manager can do. Eventually the players got to put it away. They had a lot of quality opportunities. I mean, Luka, Samardzic, I mean, so the names go on and on and on. They had chances in this game. They just could not put it back. And it wasn't just like the keeper, you know, Motipo was making save after save. They were just missing the net. I mean, you got to put it on target. Give your team a chance. Make the keeper get a save. And, you know, unfortunately they weren't doing that. And that may be to their demise. Sassuolo's obviously on Lake Como now, taking vacation.
Hope they don't play Como. Como would beat them right now.
I think so. Only thing I'll say about Torino Frosinone, Milinkovic-Savic gets the 17th shutout of the season. I mean, he's quietly been a really good keeper. That defense has been solid most of the year. He's not going to get 21 though. I looked at the next five games; it's all top 10 team or top five teams. So he's not going to get that record. Sommer might get it though. Fiorentina did not have a hangover after their Conference League win. And, you know, it was a difficult win against Salernitana. Ochoa made some good saves in that game. And, you know, Atalanta, I think this is also a game that had the possibility of being a trap game. But the fact that they came out so well early on avoided that mistake. It's especially when you play, when you come off with such a historic win for them, you know, beating Liverpool over two legs. It's inevitable that you're going to have a letdown, and they didn't. And this Monza team, they've been on vacation for the last month or so that kind of helps.
They've hit the beach.
But, you know, Atalanta kept going at it, and they had many opportunities before that, the Catalare goal, and then, you know, they added with that Torre goal there. And so once that happened, they could kind of cruise, and obviously Monza would come back naturally. But, Atalanta avoided the mistake that Roma made, and I think, you know, Roma gonna be clinching their fist here at the end of the season because, you know, they're holding the last spot. Atalanta are more than capable of taking it. This Roma team has been good. I think this one game against Bologna is not going to be the end of them. I think, obviously, they got a lot of confidence from that Milan victory going into the next round against a difficult Bayer Leverkusen. But they got some games coming up ahead that they need to secure, and I think De Rossi, I'm gaining more and more confidence with him that he can do the job, and Atalanta looks like they're going to need to win the Europa League to get that chance at a Champions League spot. But we'll see. Yeah. It may come down to Roma-Atalanta in the Europa League, which is even better for Serie A because both those teams are vying for the last spot. Why not do it in a Europa League final and make it a side right there? I think that would be must-see TV.
That would be fun. That would definitely be fun. I think Marco Baroni deserves a lot of credit at Hellas Verona. I mean, when I looked at what they were doing in January, and they were selling Ngonge, and they were selling a handful of guys. I was like, are they prepping themselves for relegation and going down to City B? They went out and they re-recruited. They brought in some guys, you know, that are looking the part that can help them out. That has steered the ship and has got them at safety right now. You know, so I think they're interesting. Empoli could possibly be setting the record for, how do I best describe this? Surviving with the fewest number of goals over the season. they have 26 goals.
Yep.
You know, joint worst with Salernitana in this league, and they're in a survival position. So we thought, you know, a few weeks ago that the lack of goals would be their downfall. Still very well could be. There's a lot to play for still. But that's just astonishing that's their goal rate and that they may survive. So, you know, so that's a useful little nugget there. The Torinos and the Monzas of the world are pretty much checked out. I think that Genoa is kind of going in that direction too. They're like, all right, we're good. You usually see that from mid-table teams at this time of the year where there's really no upward mobility, but you're also not in any you're not in any danger. So,
yeah.
So I think you got some of that going on with those three teams. And yeah, we've kind of talked about some of the other big ones. You know, Lazio's putting it together maybe a little too late, even though they've won 4 out of 5. You know, so, but still, I mean, 3 points out of the fifth spot, it's, you know, never say never. Roma does have a game in hand, but they are starting to put it together. You know, they are putting it together a little bit under Tudor here. You know, we'll just have to keep the eye on them here for a possible late run as they're finding ways to win.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's segue into Lazio because, man, they today had extra time. Was it? Would it have been extra time?
No. That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know. I assume it would go into extra time.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it would have gone to extra time because they were winning 2-0. Yeah. They were winning 2-0, and Juve won the first leg 2-0, so it was 2-2 on aggregate. And then it is Arkadiusz Milik in the 83rd minute. Milik and Weah come on as substitutes. Weah came on in the 70th minute. Milik came on in the 81st minute. 2 minutes after Milik comes on, Weah assists him to make it 2-1 and give Juve the lead on aggregate and bounce Lazio from the Coppa Italia and reach yet another final in the Coppa Italia. Second leg on tomorrow. We have Atalanta hosting Fiorentina. Fiorentina won the first leg at the Artemio Franchi 1-0. We'll see if Atalanta can turn this around in Bergamo. It's the makings of an exciting game, you know, and I think that I could see with some of the defending issues that Fiorentina can tend to have, although they've shown some better defending over recent weeks. It could be an interesting one here, Richard. First of all, comments on the Lazio-Juventus game, very entertaining, and Lazio really gave it a go and maybe might have played well enough to overturn the tie and go through to the final. And then thoughts on the game tomorrow, Atalanta and Fiorentina. This could be fireworks, especially if there's an early goal.
Yeah. Well, first to start with the Lazio game, I think most people thought this leg was done and dusted after a 2-0 win by Juve in the first leg. But Lazio and Tudor, you got to give them credit. They came out with the right game plan. They attacked this thing. Castellanos finally gets his goal-scoring boots on. Scores the goal in the 12th minute, and then just after halftime, they almost got the second goal just before halftime. On the other side of the break, again, a nice counterattack goal. What a really, really well done, the counterattack. A hint of offsides there, but wasn't called. And Castellanos puts it away, 2-0. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what is going on here? Like, I did not expect this. And it just seemed like Juve had no answers at that point, but they slowly started getting the game through substitutions. I mean, as Vincent says, classic Allegri ball where you just kind of shithouse your way, play defensively, and feast on your opportunities. Weah comes in, provides a little bit more mobility. And then Milik comes in, right place, right time. Weah with a wonderful cross to find him, whether it was intentional or not. I think Kostic's pass over the top to Weah was phenomenal. Fully intended there. Way at one time, I don't know if you're going back post or you're looking for Arkadiusz Milik, finds him nonetheless, tap in goal, the typical Milik goal there. And as soon as he scored the goal, you're like, Lazio's not scoring again. They're not. Typical Allegri game. And so kudos to Lazio, where they should have been done and dusted for the first leg. They came back and found and they got him back into the game. Yeah. But this is, you need more than that to beat Juventus, and Juventus, they got it done. And so they're back in the finals here. And it's an interesting game. I think if, you know, Fiorentina, Atalanta could be fireworks. I think, like you said, if an early goal, if Atalanta scores early, it could go off. It'll be really wide open if Fiorentina score early, because Atalanta will have to throw everything in the kitchen sink at them. But, you know, depending on who wins this game, I think for Juventus, if you're Juventus, you probably want to see Fiorentina. They're your rivals, but you're historically been the dominant of the two teams when you face to face. Atalanta, you never know. They have so much talent on the team, and they can be anybody. Ask Liverpool at any given moment, and they can play a multitude of ways. That's probably a more difficult game if you're looking at Juventus standpoint. But Atalanta Fiorentina, that's going to be an interesting game.
It is.
We know what Vincenzo Italiano can do in cup games. He has to look at this like a cup game and be smart about it. And if they can find a way to feast on the counterattacks through, you know, Kouame or Ikone or whomever, they can really sneak an early goal and really lock up shop and keep Atalanta out. It'll be interesting to see. I'm absolutely gonna be watching this game.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun game. I will. Wow, it's a hard one to predict. So, but I think that what Atalanta will have going for them, they're playing at home.
Yeah.
I it's still a Fiorentina defense that is not without its flaws. Even though they have probably tightened up a little bit in recent games, they've done it against, they've done it against, they did give up two to Roma. They do give up two to Milan. They lost to Juve 1-0. So against the better teams, they're still not quite getting there. So I think that I'm going to hang my hat on that. And I'm going to say that Atalanta win this by two goals. They win 3-1 in Bergamo. They'll go through 3-2 on aggregate. And I think we see a Juventus-Atalanta final.
Yeah, it's hard to call. I think Atalanta are on a bit of a high at the moment, and they can use that to their advantage. And I think their attackers are coming into form. Kind of you mentioned Traore, and Lookman's getting on right now. De Catalari really hasn't stopped all season. Scamacca has got a boatload of confidence at the moment. Yeah, I like Atalanta in this one. I think, would you say 3-1?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see them winning. I'm gonna say 2-0. I say they went 2-1 as over two legs, and play Juventus. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens with that. Juventus is in the final. Is it Atalanta? Is it Fiorentina? We both think it'll be Atalanta. So, much to play for there tomorrow. It should be an entertaining game. Make sure you catch it if you can. So let us wrap it all up. It is time for the world's most popular hashtag game. It is time for Who Won Calcio Twitter. Take it away, Richard.
All right, so starting things off, we have Kier Palulu here, and it says, not even funny, so it's a video of... it's Pep Guardiola, say, pressing, tactical, position, counterattacks. Meanwhile, Ancelotti's philosophy is, it's a power of friendship. You get to know your players, become one with them, and they win for you, so... it's a contrast in styles of team. I got to turn that music down. It was way too high for me, but it's pretty funny there. And Kiara says, not even funny anymore, man. This is so true. It is. It is.
Mm. So let's see. Big Show is nominated here by Apex. The El Juve cast is reporting. This is through Fab Della Valle and Gazzetta.it. Juventus will have to pay 19.5 million euros gross plus interest to Cristiano Ronaldo as ruled in court for the missing salary owed from the now infamous salary maneuver. Big Show saying they just lost the whole transfer budget. Ronaldo might be the GOAT.
okay.
Kind of hard to get players.
Yeah. All right. So Pep Guardiola begging for another 500 million euros from the Sheik.
That's good.
Oh, my God.
Let's see. Out of context football manager, Bayern 1-0 over Arsenal, Real Madrid 1-0 over City, Atalanta 3-0 over Liverpool, Man United knocked out in the group stage, Newcastle knocked out in the group stage with the, are we the farmers?
That's the Premier League scene. Are we the farmers?
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of which, Carlo Garganese says, only one Premier League team left in Europe, Farmers League.
And then the piling on of English teams doesn't end there. We had at Juve LA underscore two more English teams Brexited Europe today.
That's good. All right, moving on. Apex nominated another one. This one comes from the Fruitier, and it's showing, I guess it was Teo falling asleep on the job there against Lukaku there.
Okay, that's what that is. Okay, took me a minute to figure that out.
What was this?
DeMarco prop. This post is unavailable.
It must have been a comment about this picture. It says La squadra più forte de Europa League, and that's a picture of Milan. So it must have been a comment about Milan and how they lost, probably.
All right. I don't remember anymore. The Interistes are chanting Pioli's on fire.
That's pretty good.
turning a Milan fan song against them.
that's great. That is great. Those are the nominees there. Obviously, Interisti will choose this one as the winner there. I don't know. Farmers League is funny. The Pep one was pretty funny too.
As in the spirit of
family show.
You know, in the spirit of this being a day to celebrate Inter, I think Stadium Traveler gets it. That's just really funny.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's really the Inter Ultras.
Yeah.
That are more getting the credit for this. Not Stadium Traveler.
You get a little extra there, you know. All right. Well, there you go. There you have it. That's a winner this week.
So the winner is going to be Inter's Curva Nord is getting this, not necessarily Stadium Travelers.
Yeah, Stadium Travelers. Curva Nord. And they deserve it, right? They won the title. Might as well give them another title here. You know, why not? They get the double. Good things there. Good things there. All right, that wraps another episode of City Sit Down. Season is winding down. Just the formalities now, but the places and what's left up for grabs. Champions League obviously still up for grabs, and it could come down to Roma, Atalanta, and Europa League. Who knows? Maybe both make it into Champions League. As Anthony says, maybe we get six teams in Champions League. We shall see. And then, of course, the relegation fight's going to be a doozy. Obviously, Salernitana are down. Hearing Pioli is on fire in the background.
Pioli's still on fire, huh?
He's still on fire. I'm like, what is going on? As I was saying, Salernitana, they're down. Sassuolo look like they're going down, and Frosinone, but I mean, it's Frosinone, Sassuolo, and Udinese really battling out for the last two spots.
Well, you got the teams on 31 and 32. They're still not comfortable yet, so let's...
I think Cagliari are comfortable more so than, obviously, Hellas and Empoli, but yeah, I think it's...
I just think on how Cagliari are playing, they're gonna be fine, yeah. So we'll see.
Lecce's probably the only one that's really comfortable, I think.
Yep, no doubt about it. So I think with all that in mind, we're going to go ahead and put a bow on this champion crowning edition of City House Sit Down, where we have our own channel on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud. Otherwise, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, those are fine too. Wherever there's podcasts, you're going to find us, City House Sit Down. At City House Sit Down on Twitter, Instagram. You can also find us on Facebook. Connect with us there. Drop any questions, any thoughts, any comments. We'd love to hear from you all on the social media platforms. If you are watching this here on YouTube for the first time and you like what you see, well, of course you drop a like because that helps us out. But make sure you subscribe and then make sure you hit that notification bell, because that means you'll get the go-ahead when you'll get the notification and the heads-up when we go on the air. And it's generally Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, unless we advertise otherwise. So so we'll do it again next Tuesday night at 9 p.m., right, Richard?
Sounds good.
All right. Shout-out to the chat. You guys are amazing, as always. Thank you for the energy from you guys. It's always appreciated, so go from there. We will be back next week. We'll chat a little further, and we're winding things down. We have a champion. We still have some places that teams are jockeying for, especially in the relegation. So there's still things to talk about, and we will do exactly that when we join you again next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. East. So until then, thank you for listening. This is for Richard. I'm Frank. And as always, make sure you tell your paisans about us. Ciao. Dove sei in mezzo, la caccia!